You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Melting Pot here every Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. This Sunday, Halloween, we have in the studios right now special guests all the way from Denmark. Quadrin is here. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Now, we're going to do a little interview, and you're also going to play a few songs and start off with some songs, so I'll just throw it straight to you. This is Quadrin right now on Melting Pot here at KPFK.
I've been trying
You accepted my crimes as if you knew they were coming, like nicking candy from a kid. You've been defeating my verbal beatings, though I won't stop my torture until you show you got this too. Deal with your temper than feel your careless empathy. But you say, show, I won't grow. But you say, show, I won't grow. I've been trying to get you under my pressure. I've been trying to get you under my pressure.
Ooh, very nice. Music from Quadrant here on KPFK 90.7 FM, Melting Pot. I just want to thank you guys for coming in
once again.
And for performing. You guys were just, you're one of the reasons that you were here. You were just playing a show with Bilal at the Echoplex. How did things go?
Really good. It was really overwhelming, actually. It's really nice to get to perform such an intimate setup.
Mm-hmm.
It was me and the harp, and I had my laptop where we did some backtrack chords and very simple beats.
Yeah.
So it was the easiest instrument and the hardest instrument in the world.
Are you talking the laptop or the harp and the voice?
The laptop is the easiest and the harp is the most difficult. No, the voice is the most difficult.
In some ways, I feel like we should introduce you to some of the listeners. Your record came out overseas last year. And back then I was over at KCRW. A number of KCRW DJs just fell in love with this record, thanks to Anthony Valdez, who was the first one kind of to bring it to everybody and just was adamant about, you know, you need to hear this. It's amazing. And that was basically every single person then would say the same thing. You need to hear this. This is amazing. Anthony brought it to me, but you need to hear it too. And again and again and again and again. And the listeners started doing it as well. And coming out now this year, the records come out here in the States on Plug Research. But I still feel like in some ways the band is kind of a Los Angeles, in some ways maybe best kept secret, still kind of a secret. So could you tell listeners a little bit about how you guys got together and put this sound together?
Yeah, I mean, it was a funny process, or a very different process. And I think you kind of forget it now, but when we were starting out to create this, we didn't have any like bigger aspirations or ambitions other than actually just to make a record. And it's, in many ways, I think that was a big advantage, because we didn't have any pressure. So we were just, you know, we were just doing whatever we felt like. And each song was kind of just a trial and error kind of experience, like figuring out what works, what doesn't work, you know, just still playing around. And I think some of the most interesting music is when you're just playing around. So we had that going for us, and we got this offer, or Coco got this offer, from a film director who was interested in getting the same voice kind of like as a cohesiveness or like a red thread through a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted some songs that they could, you know, they could put in there, and they wanted like it to be almost kind of conceptual or like the same sound of some sort. And we had been slowly working more and more together, and Coco approached me with this, and we just started figuring out like what to do, if it was going to be in Danish or is it in English, what kind of sound is it going to be, mm-hmm. what's the theme, what's the topic, how is it you know, is it a duo, is it a group, is it just the two of us, you know, all of these were kind of like open questions that we were kind of trying to figure out. And we just slowly made the music, and what was amazing was that they were sponsoring the record, more or less. Mm. They were paying for having the option to use whatever songs we did for their film. But other than that, we had all the rights to the songs. So we just had like a carte blanche, kind of like just like free hands to do whatever we wanted to do musically, because the film director just loved Coco's voice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was a really good start. So we never had that pressure from a label or you have to do this and this and that, or there has to be this and this and that. We were just coming up with the concept as we were going along, figuring out the sound and how we were going to do it. So after that, we didn't even have a label to release it on, because it was for a movie. Mm-hmm. And I think the producer of the film that was producing it wanted to try and recoup some of the money, so he was actually the one that was like most aggressive trying to get deals with labels and so forth, and trying to set up a deal of some sort. And he found this label in Denmark, which has proven out to be really nice for us, called Alarm Music. And from there on, it kind of just, like a lot of things just kind of stumbled into each other. And we're still not quite sure how people got a hold of the CD. Like, I mean, now there's the internet and people can find music, but we never mailed the CD to anyone in the States, mm-hmm. to start off with. And it wasn't even on iTunes before January worldwide. And then it was taken off, and then it was put up again when Plug Research took over the worldwide deal. But before that, it was just like it was a Danish secret. It wasn't even an American secret, you know? Yeah. So I think it's just, you know, without rubbing our own halos, it's kind of a story of just good muse, or at least people feel it's good music, and it's just spreading because it's good music, not because there's a lot of money to promote it, or we have a video with 8 naked women, or, you know, it's just been about the music, and that's kind of been what is happening all the way, in each step. So
yeah, I mean, it almost seems like, you know, an independent musician's kind of like dream fairy tale, the way everything has come together. I mean, both in terms of just kind of coming together. And the two of you had done work prior to the film score.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so you kind of were aware of each other, but you really hadn't done kind of just let's make music together, like had that kind of conversation or started making music. It really was just it just kind of came together like that.
Kind of. I mean, we were slowly getting into it, but I think with all really good partnerships or musical collaborations, mm-hmm. it's not a process that takes like a week. It's a longer period of getting to know each other, getting to know each other's ambitions, figuring out what the other person wants, how you work well together. I mean, it's in many ways like a marriage also, you know. There's a lot of things that you need to work out and make sure that works, and you need to trust each other in many ways, and you like understand each other, like how do we go from not having anything to completing a song, you know, especially mm-hmm. when you're only two people. You know, there's a lot of decisions that we make on our own, whereas if you're in a band, then, you know, the drummer plays the drums, the singer often writes everything and or at least the lyrics and has the melody, and that's, you know, his, and the guitarist plays the guitar. And here it was more like a collaborative effort between the two of us, figuring out like how are we going to do this, and it's still developing. We're still figuring out better and better ways, and so it's a process. So that took us a while before we got to that point where we were like, let's do it let's do an album, let's, you know, and let's call it something.
Yeah,
and
we didn't really have time to discuss it.
No.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we should still have that discussion, like, yeah. What do we want to be?
Yeah.
It was more like, okay, these people want some music from us. What can we do? And we knew we liked each other, so it's like, we need this to happen.
Yeah.
And it turned out really well. And I mean, just talking about it right now, I'm still like, did this really happen?
Yeah.
I still remember when I just knew Robin from watching him on the streets and heard of him, and now I'm actually working with him.
That's weird.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And how much of the music was actually created specifically for the film? Like, what's on the record was basically the entire record, originally things that you were conceiving for use in the film?
Good question. How should we put that? I mean, some of the lyrics were, I mean, it's kind of nice actually to have something that you can use as an inspiration, and we used it partly, but it wasn't like it was directly about anything. Like, but there was,
no. I think the reason why we agreed to do music for the film was because that they just wanted whatever we made. So it wasn't like, oh, we have to do a up-tempo song, we have to do a slow song. It's more like, you know, whatever we feel like doing, and then hopefully they liked it, and they did. So no, it's more like whatever we like. I mean, we talk about when we start to work on a song, and we talk about like where we want this song to go, just because it's not only one person working. So it's nice for the other one to know which direction and which inspiration are in the songs.
Yeah, it actually, it makes, I mean, in terms of listening to the record, to me, it makes a lot of sense that a lot of it was kind of conceived around film, because it has this real cinematic quality. And that was one of the things that, I mean, it, I guess in some ways, and I think you've actually, I think at least Robin has used this term to describe y'all's sound, is kind of like an electronic soul kind of sound. But there are a lot of different kind of musical textures and colors in this music. It's like there, every time, I feel like that first couple of times when I was listening to it, when it was really brand new, like I'd feel like, okay, this is definitely kind of like a straight kind of modern soul kind of feel. And then like something really unexpected would happen. Like these horns would just come out and really almost seem to work against like the kind of tone. And it's just like when I try to like explain it to people, like what you guys sound like, I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of like if you take like some Sly Stone, mid-70s Sly Stone, but then you add in like some David Lynch like film music with that.
Okay.
And even like kind of some straight Motown kind of sounds, but always with this like really kind of vibrant and like almost like happy kind of sound to it. But like all those things shouldn't sound like that.
You sure you're not clairvoyant?
No.
Careful, Robin's falling in love with you right now.
That's pretty crazy. Actually, Sly Stone was probably like my biggest teenage fascination, like crazy. Like I bought stuff on eBay, like paper articles I paid like $20 for, like crazy, and wrote articles on him in English when I was like 14 years old and could hardly like spell, you know, like I was so into him, and I know all of his records like word for word and like note for note. And Lynch also is like a, like probably my favorite film director of all time, so you're pretty on point with that. But I think we both really like a lot of genres, a lot of styles, and I think it's important for the both of us that we try, and every time that we do a song, we're trying to approach it in a new way, or trying to, this my old theory teacher used to say that you should look at music as you have to remember to pay back with interest. You know, like that's your responsibility. Is it if you do something that you want to share with others, it's your responsibility of creating something that will enlighten them, but you know, will make them have to think, or you know, will move them in any kind of way. And I mean, there's a million ways to do that, of course, but one of the ways that I think we both really like and think is interesting is mixing elements that necessarily shouldn't be mixed, mm-hmm. you know, like trying things from a new way, having that challenge to kind of, you know, go to the other side of the mountain and actually make those things work.
And it's about balance too, right?
Totally.
We're really into balance. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we had no, we don't want to overdo anything. It's all about finding like the right level.
Sure, definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Contrast and balance, like, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, and that's, you know, as I was saying, it's like on the one hand, the music is very easy to describe, and especially, it really don't even have to describe it. You can just play it for people and they feel it immediately. But it does have that quality of kind of like being very easy to describe and very difficult to describe. Mm-hmm. There are like a lot of moments, you know, some of the songs are like clearly inspired by things, you know, like a song like Jeans, a clear like Sly Stone reference, the Into My Own Jeans and into My Own Thing.
Definitely.
kind of, but it switches it up in a way that's not, it's not anything close to a cover. Mm. It's not even really a sample. That's the same case with another song. I think it's Tone, yeah, that has almost kind of like a reference to the Shangri-La's.
Yeah, yeah, remember. The remember part.
But it's something that when you know that song, it like it pops out to you and it's like, whoa. Didn't expect that to get there.
No.
But then it also is just something that really kind of grabs you for listeners, I guess, that don't quite have all those reference. Just really something that just kind of like pulls you in.
It's more
elements are there.
Sorry, and it's definitely, you're right. I mean, it's definitely meant more as an homage or like an ode to those people than trying to take their idea and using it, you know? Like, I think we both appreciate sampling, but the way that we like sampling is if you take something and you create it into something entirely new and you build upon that. Mm-hmm. You don't only use that and loop it and then, you know, you sing on top of it. You take elements of it and create something new to like mix it and fusion it, you know. And I think that's what is interesting, you know, and that's kind of the same discussion about like taking different genres or mixing them together, having, for instance, Day, a track where it's you know, you can strip it down and you can also just play it on the piano. It could be a jazz standard, but the way that it's packaged and the way that Coco is singing it, it's suddenly a whole another different place too, and it has electronic elements too, and the synthesizers are like gliding, mm-hmm. portamento, but it's also got strings, you know, so it's kind of like 2010, but it's also 1961. And I think that's, you know, and sometimes it comes off like clearer than others. Sometimes it's more like, you know, small details. Sometimes it's, you know, it's easier to tell, mm-hmm. but I think that's what interests us. And we were also discussing that a lot because at the point where we were doing the record, there was this really big retro soul thing going on with Amy Winehouse and mm-hmm. Duffy and et cetera. And we both, you know, love a lot of that music and a lot of those artists and singers. But it's just, it's funny also to try and incorporate what's happening now and not only trying to duplicate something, you know, not renovate something, but trying to innovate something, like trying to add on. Because there is a lot of good stuff happening now, I think, you know, like everyone has the possibility of making music and expressing themselves. And there's so many new sounds and ways of creating sounds to common man that you can get that you couldn't when you were in the, you know, like if you look at records in the 70s, if you had to use a synthesizer, you needed like a programmer mm-hmm. to like program it for you, you know? Mm-hmm. And a synthesizer would be like $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000. Like it was only Stevie Wonder who could afford one in soul music, or else you had to rent one, you know? Mm-hmm. And now all you need is a MIDI keyboard and a computer, and you can even probably download a program illegally on the net, and then you have it in within like $200. Mm-hmm. And I think some of those aesthetics and ideas and sounds, and those are really important too, and they're a product of me and Coco's generation also, I think. And so they're important to also have in the music.
Yeah, yeah. It strikes me, in especially in the way that Coco described it earlier, as just this importance to balance in your music. Just how difficult it is in a lot of cases. Again, because I listen to a ton of music as a DJ, how rare it is to find people who strike that real balance between something that's very distinct and sounds particular to them, but also at the same time strikes you as familiar because of how it draws on all those different sounds. One of the things, though, that I thought also was really interesting about your record, as I was saying, it has all these different kind of feelings and textures and colors to it. It seems, though, like the moodiest song and the one with slightly darker tones, though it because I can't speak the language, that may be some of it as well, is the final track, the only track that's actually in Danish. And so one of the things I was really wondering was just kind of the differences for you performing your music in English versus Danish. And it seems from the record, which is, you know, 9/10 English, that you have a preference there. But maybe I wanted to ask that question too. Just, is there a real difference between kind of conceiving your sound with English lyrics behind it, or even kind of American or English sensibilities versus Danish sensibilities or lyrics?
Well, first of all, I have to say that the song that's in Danish, we didn't write.
Okay.
It's a cover song, and that was like the only thing we had to do for the film. So, yeah, it was a tough job for us because it's a very beautiful song originally too. So it was a tough job for us to try to make it our own. And yes, there is a difference in the singing in English or Danish. Somehow I think your native tongue is a little bit more personal. But I don't know, because when you're out here for a longer period of time, I think that English gets to you too. I mean, it gets personal. And I think that it's just really words. And I don't really think about it if I sing out Danish or English. It's all about, like, the sentences and the structure of them and the sound of the words. I think it's more about the notes too that I would choose to sing in, that beholds the emotions. But I would definitely like to try to do some more singing in Danish. I don't think I'm done with that. But actually, I think one of the reasons why people seem to think that it's a very emotional song, the last one, I think was the last one we did for the album, actually. So I think at that point, we just, you know, me and Robin have been working for a longer period of time, and I kind of explored my voice a little bit more and figured out how I like to sound. So I think that has something to do with it also.
And then also, I think, in regards to English, Danish, like, we had some experiences with it also, because the way we met was through this project that we have in Denmark called Boom Clap Bachelors, which is in Danish, and the concept of some sort was to try and do a modern electronic soul record, or at least with main focus on soul elements, we had already done the record when Coco got involved, but she basically took over the live show and slowly worked her way from singing one or two songs to more or less being the main act. It more or less became Coco and Boom Clap Bachelors, which was you know, amazing to see, and also, you know, why I had, you know, such a, you know, like a an interest in trying to do more and more music with Coco, because I thought it was very apparent that she did what I at least think is the most difficult, is being a natural performer. I think if you are that and you're able to interpret songs that you haven't even written, and you made them even better, you know, and you made them even, you know, stand out even more, then how hard can it be to do some original material, you know, if you're already able to interpret? And she's shown that already with the Danish song and with Baby Be Mine cover. So it's more like getting to learn some tools as to how the process is, and getting to learn the process And I think that's also how, what the first record was figuring out, like, how does this work, you know? Because there's a lot of things that, you know, if you haven't done music that you or haven't recorded or produced music that you just don't know how does it work, you know, modern day. Of course, you can go in and, you know, play on the piano and write the whole song and go into the studio and be like, I have everything ready. But it's really rare now these days that that's how it works. And especially if you're only two people, then it takes time recording the different instruments, getting the tempo, all the different parts, sections, going back, listening to it again, revising something, changing something, moderating something, maybe transposing. You know, there's so many different parts to the process. And that's also the process that we've been through. And we've also gone from doing a Danish album or, like, you know, singing a lot in Danish to doing, you know, that English album. And that was also one of the reasons for why we wanted it to be English, was because we were also in this collective or in this this group, and we wanted, you know, we didn't want to compete with that. We wanted to do something that was ours, and not just another, you know, offspring of Boom Clap Bachelors, something that was entirely our own.
What's the reception been like in Denmark to your guys' sound?
It's been good, I think. It was surprisingly good. we didn't expect anything.
There's not really much of a soul scene out there, right?
No, you can't say that.
Yeah. There's 10 people making it, at least that we like.
Yeah, that's right.
And two of them are in the room.
Yeah.
And one of them is involved with all the projects.
Yeah. And eight of the other ones we work with on and off. So,
It's a small country, so you have to compare everything with the size, you know.
Totally.
But it's definitely, I think the north is more rock oriented.
Yeah, no, there's a major death metal scene out there. That's the case with a lot of Scandinavia.
Norway is like really
Norway.
Heavy. It's true.
Netherlands, I think. So I mean, it has been really good. I mean, we definitely could have gotten more hype, if you ask me.
But we're very much like a bigger city group, and I think that works for our advantage in the whole world. But in Denmark, there is one big city, Copenhagen, the capital. But there's still like 4 million people besides that, you know, and there's 1 million more or less in the greater area of Copenhagen. So if you need to like make it, you still need to get all the, excuse me my term, peasants and farmers that are living, you know, outside of the bigger cities to get it. And we're still, you know, we're still not there.
Let's just say I think our sound is I would describe it as warm and definitely, you know, I mean, American inspired somehow, like the soul scene of America. And I think in Denmark that's not like the hardest thing to do.
No.
So we don't really have the status of being like the new it yet.
Okay. You should tell about the list though. That's pretty funny. The hipster list.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, but we do get some underground attention. That's for sure. There is a guy in Denmark called Copen Hipster. He's like, he has this blog where he writes about all the fancy people in Copenhagen. It's very ironic and it's really funny to follow. And he made like a list of all the indie hipsters and what was the next one? Like he just categorized all the most hyped people, and we were on the in the top. We were very proud because we didn't realize.
That we were hipsters. But that's kind of like how it is. Also, like you never really know how many people listen to it or like get it. You know, so it's the same in Denmark, and you get surprised sometimes that actually a lot of people have heard it and listened to it. Like so.
We're still working on Denmark.
They
will get it.
Yeah, for sure.
It sounds somewhat similar to me in a lot of ways. The experience of Little Dragon in Sweden, kind of the same kind of thing, where there is a relatively small kind of soul scene, more or less based off of similar players. But it seems like their reception and kind of the love that they get outside, particularly in the States, and especially in some place like Los Angeles, is like light years away from what they get from home.
Totally. And I mean, they're kind of getting there now in Sweden, but still in Denmark, they're like us. They're like, you know, friends that I have that listen to soul doesn't even know them, you know. So
they're like really like interesting and strange when you talk about Little Dragon people. Like, I don't know them. It's like I bring something, you know, a vegetable nobody has seen before.
Totally. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, for instance, like a show last night, that would be like a major event in Denmark if that happened. If I had that audience in Denmark, it would be. I mean, I don't think it could happen.
Storvika, Big Vigga.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, 1,500 people.
That's true, but it was like normal almost. It's like okay,
it's LA, night.
LA like, Thursday night. Yeah, thank you, LA. Love you. In Denmark, it would be like, you know, it'd almost be headlining the music. Mm-hmm. Like Quadron gets a lot of love and attention.
Yeah. It does seem that you guys have really found a lot of just kind of similar-minded people, kind of similar music aesthetics out here in Los Angeles on the West Coast. What's that experience? Because I know now, Robin, you're basically living here, more or less.
Yeah.
What's that experience been like, you not only having people kind of hear your music when you didn't expect, but then making all these new kind of musical connections here in Los Angeles too?
It's great. I mean, we've met some amazing people already, and you know, we're just every day is kind of an adventure in many ways, and it's great. It really is. It is kind of a cliche, but you know, cliches are often a cliche because they're true. You know, because there's a reason for them. And the one cliche about, you know, being close to the source or the roots of whatever you're doing has a major impact. It just does. It just has that. And being in a place where people appreciate what you do and you feel it just gives you that, you know, that push and that feeling of wanting to do more and it being appreciated. And that is really important. I think we both of us have a really good upraising, and we've been brought up very, like respectable and appreciative of others, and humble to a long extent or a big extent. So I think we've been pretty good at still just like, you know, keep working at it and just keep trying to grow and build it. But it is weird. Every time almost you go out, you meet or someone approaches you and wants to talk to you, or, you know, a lot of people write you every day that you don't know, you know, and that's still weird. Like, that still keeps being weird. But I think we've been good at just, you know, still just looking at it as, you know, we still need to work hard. We still need to do this, we still need to appreciate it, we still need to, you know, just focus on the music.
And I mean, but even though people approaches you and even though you seem like you have a lot of fans, that doesn't make your music sound any better.
No, that's the thing.
So we're both really aware of, like, I mean, it's all good and thank you for your love, but we should still work and we can still be better.
We're critics, we're hard critics of ourselves also, I think. We both really want to do good, and we still like not stressed but are like nervous about every step, which I think is really good. You know, we're not just sitting on our throne and being like, you know, taking anything for granted. We appreciate every thing that happens, and just want to chain that together with moving over here, is that then you start, you know, experiencing even more and more amazing things, and you know, you just keep remembering not to take it for granted, you know, to really remember how special it is, and the people you meet and the people that tell you that they like their music, and that's what makes you want to do it.
And people are so good at it over here.
Yeah,
to share the love. Mm-hmm. If they like something, they're not afraid to go and tell you. That's so different from our country. And it's really, I really appreciate it every time, even though sometimes people seem almost embarrassed to approach me and like, oh, I just wanted to say I love it. But it, I mean, it really means something to us because it's not normal in our country. And when you don't have, you know, a social network, at least not a big one yet, and you don't really know that many people, it's so nice to get appreciated.
For sure.
And I would imagine that was the case earlier in the summer. You did kind of a short tour of the U.S. and went to a bunch of different cities, including to the South. I'm originally from Atlanta,
cool.
Which has a pretty nice also soul scene out there. And I would imagine that the people were pretty responsive to you out there.
Yeah, that was – sorry.
No, go ahead.
It was just a funny experience. Uh-huh. It was just a crazy day. I was just
crazy
thinking about
day.
It.
Oh, my God.
Okay. You have to tell a little about it.
Well, I had a bit of a cold, and I wanted to get my hair bleached. So instead of taking a nap, I went to the hairdresser and sat for 8 hours and got my hair bleached with the show. But it always,
I couldn't recognize it.
No,
and she came to the door, shut high. I was like,
blonde. Hi. Yeah, I was like Marilyn Monroe blonde, and I just sat there, the hairdresser, with a big bottle of ginger, squeezed ginger, fresh ginger, and I just tried to drink it all. But I practically lost my voice. I didn't have any voice. I never tried to do a show without any voice for this show. Like Atlanta, and I was like, I'm sorry, Atlanta, but I lost my voice. I'm going to try to do it anyways. And they were really nice.
They were nice.
It
was a really good crowd, and you could tell people you really
and
wanted.
And the sound system at the venue, oh my God.
There was
You don't expect. Oh my God.
It was only mono. Mm. They didn't even have it stereo. So everything they had was like, they had two speakers, but they were playing the same thing, and everybody was turning away from the stage also, so the band couldn't really hear what was happening either. And the sound engineer apparently wasn't the sound engineer. He had just been like called in like an hour before, and he was like grumpy as crazy, you know? And everything was just like against us. But
against us.
Yeah, people really appreciated it. And like you were saying, like, you know, coming to some of these cities, not ever talking to anyone from Atlanta before, and then suddenly you visit a CD shop and it's the CD he's been selling the most, and he's a huge fan. And we go around with these people that were promoting it and setting it up, and you know, they were letting us stay in their house and helping us, and the,
so nice, yeah.
Yeah, and
Atlanta seemed really nice.
Yeah.
I really like to stay there for a longer period.
It's really
it's
nice.
Beautiful, yeah.
It's a nice spot.
Five Points? What's it?
Little
it,
Five Points?
Yeah, it's nice.
Out there. Yeah, there are nice, a lot of nice little areas. I have nothing to say bad about my original place. I just like California a little better. That's all. One of the things, though, I was kind of connected, especially coming from Atlanta and thinking about the crowds out there, that I was really interested in getting your opinion about, because in the U.S., soul music has for a long period of time had this real kind of attachment to black culture and African Americans. And in Denmark, I can't imagine there being a lot of African Americans there, and neither of you are. And so that was one of the things I was wondering about in hearing your music. I think there might be kind of in the U.S. and the States, kind of audiences maybe expect a certain kind of look, and then to meet you is a little bit different. And I was just wondering, like, how you deal with that kind of particular kinds of issues around in this music, for better or worse.
It's a good question.
Yeah,
really good.
First
question.
Of all. We are African Americans.
Yeah.
We just lost some color.
Yeah. You know, actually, you know, genetically speaking, very true.
Yeah.
Everybody comes from Africa originally.
That's
true. But actually, I mean, the name Quadron is not just for fun. My grandfather, he is actually African. Hmm. So I'm a quarter black. And Robin's grandfather is actually African American.
Yeah. He's from Flint, Michigan.
Uh-huh. So there you go.
Yeah, and then
we also get the story behind the name, very kind of particular American racial reference, Quadroon,
exactly.
The thing, especially in some parts of the South, for people who had that one quarter black.
Exactly.
There you go. I'm completely shocked and surprised now, as well I should be. Somebody who teaches race in classes. That's exactly, you know, what I should know better.
No. We took out 1 O because it looked better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Danish, it's actually spelled KVADRON. Mm-hmm. So it's like a weird mixture between the American quadroon and kvadron. Mm-hmm. Which you say in Danish.
Yeah.
And
we're very proud of that little quarter.
We are, actually.
We're very proud of it.
We're really.
Because, as you said, there's not many African-Americans in Denmark. So whatever little bit of color you have, you're very proud of. Mm. I don't know exactly if our genes is where we, you know, have the soul music from. Mm. But for us, soul is the truth mm-hmm. of music.
Yeah.
That's where we find the truth. So it just seems so obvious for us to make music that we love.
It feels very natural.
Yeah.
And I think in many ways that in Europe there's a whole different way of looking at race.
Mm-hmm.
And what we thought was interesting also was that normally people aren't, I mean, they're proud of it, but it's not necessarily something that they'll go around saying, you know, like I don't tell people that my grandfather is African American necessarily unless it comes up in conversation.
Because
mm-hmm. to me, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm colorblind. I don't care if, you know, you're blue or green or what you are, but it does have a meaning still, race, and it's not something that also in Denmark where the rules for migration are really strict,
mm-hmm.
it's not something that you go out and tell publicly or that you're like wanna, you know, show the whole world or that you want to focus on. It's mm-hmm. at least not something that we've seen with other Danish artists, so we thought it was interesting also that we had that similar background, and we have to some extent kind of a similar background in some regards, and trying to, instead of like that being not a disadvantage but something that we would, you know, try and shy away from in the media, you know, show it, you know, like say we're really proud of that. Yeah. And I think that's not something that you see every day. You know?
I think it is in some ways, as you were saying, kind of a very particular kind of European sensibility around race, but not so different in a lot of ways from American one as well. Even though there are very different kind of ways of, like here, it's we're very color conscious about things, and a lot of times that does get wrapped into music. And it doesn't seem to be the same case, which is part of the reason I think so many African-American artists have enjoyed such great success in a lot of European countries.
Definitely.
But it's interesting when it comes over in kind of in a different way, too. To me, it's just about, you know, the feeling that people evoke in their music and the talent that's there. And that's something that, and clearly, as you were saying, you know, at the beginning, clearly inspired by a lot of these artists, but at the same time wanting to add your voice and something new to it as well.
Definitely.
Which we definitely appreciate.
So, thank you.
It's been funny sometimes when girls in crowds have been yelling like, "Oh, that white girl can sing!"
Yeah.
I never considered myself as white.
No.
I feel like I'm black.
No, and that's interesting also, because in Denmark, Coco wouldn't necessarily be considered white.
Mm-hmm.
She would be considered mixed, you know. So it's like you're saying, it's, you know, it's the eye of the beholder, and it's so different, you know, from whose eyes or whose perspective you're looking at.
And I'm not, I forget, you know, I forget it. So I'm like, wait, what?
What? Why?
What are you? Yeah. I mean, what does that have to do with anything?
But it is really interesting also, though, you're talking about the exchange, like American artists being appreciated in Europe and European artists getting more and more recognition in the States is something that we've kind of also rode on that wave, and like you were mentioning, a Little Dragon also.
Mm-hmm.
that is, I think, you know, there's an element of the grass is green on the other side, of course. But I think also that, you know, mixing it differently is always very fascinating. And I think the soul, R&B, urban, whatever scene now in the States is very much inspired by European music, whereas 20, 30 years ago, maybe even just 10 years ago, there was a sound of its own. Like it kind of had created its own sound. Mm-hmm. There's still some small elements of that happening all the time, of course, and subcultures and subgenres and everything. But it's looking, gravitating towards Europe more and more and more. And it's just the reverse for a lot of European artists. Mm-hmm. They're looking to America. So, you know, it's kind of that also, I think, you know, like we're really into what we didn't have or we didn't have around us also, and trying to incorporate that. And we're kind of trying to put it into like our version of what we were brought up with, you know, which is, of course, also a lot of European music. So it comes like in a fresh kind of package. Mm-hmm. And we've been kind of lucky to ride on that also, I think, that the R&B and urban music right now is a little, not desperate, but it's kind of looking for where it should go. Yeah. And like new sounds and
seems lacking direction in a way.
A little, maybe. Yeah. A little, at least if you know, there was the neo-soul period. And, you know, there's been kind of those periods that have been really strong. And right now, it's kind of a little all over, and some of the really talented major artists are even not struggling, but they're looking to try and figure out a sound or a way to approach it in a new way, and even looking more and more onto Europe. Mm-hmm. So I think we've come here, and it's always fresh when you hear something that's you know, approached a little different. So
when can we expect something new from Quadrant?
Well, the reason that I'm out here is actually because we're working on the next album.
Aha.
Yes. we have maybe 10 demos at this point. But I mean, music takes time.
Yeah.
And we wanna do it even better this time.
Yeah.
So we need to make it as perfect as possible. When it's ready, it's ready, but it will be within the next year.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the game plan.
All yeah. Right.
All right. And is there any way we can get you guys to perform a couple more songs?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. We've been speaking with Robin and Coco of Quadrant here at KPFK 90.7 Melting Pot, and I'll just throw it back to you guys for a couple more songs.
Thanks.
I think I'm feeling love that I'll save. My stories for someone said, be open to my love, baby. You could be the one I've waited.
Very nice. Coming from Quadrant here at KPFK and Melting Pot. And I just can't thank you guys enough for coming through.
Pleasure.
Pleasure. Anytime.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice having you, you know, in the neighborhood now. We'll have to have you back at some point.
Definitely. We can do this every weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so. A little guest DJ thing. I can just, you know,
sure.
Let you come in and do the show.
Go.